That I will call to order the meeting of the San Diego Metropolitan Transit System Board of Directors for January 21st, 2021. I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Aguirre?
Here.
Elo Rivera?
Present.
Fletcher?
Fletcher here.
Frank?
Here.
Galvez? Gastel? Goble? Hall?
Hall here.
Montgomery?
Here.
Moreno? Salas? Sankey?
Sankey here.
Sotelo Solis? Weber? Whipper?
Whitburn here.
Chair, we have a.
All right, thank you all. I'd like to welcome our new members of the MTS Board of Directors. We are thrilled to have you on board and look forward to our work in the coming year. Our second agenda item is approval of the minutes from the December 10th, 2020 meeting. This is approving the form and not inherently the content. And so members who were not a member of the MTS Board in December are free to vote for this item if they choose. I'll make a motion for approval of the minutes from December 10th. Is there a second?
Sankey, second.
We have a motion by myself, a second by Mr. Sankey. Are there any board member comments, discussion? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ask him if you Chair Fletcher, do you want a roll call vote on the minutes, or is it just asking for no's?
We'll just do a voice vote. All in favor of approval of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that carries. We'll go to agenda item 3, non-agendized public comment. At this point, I will ask the clerk if there are any requests for public comments.
There are none, Chair.
All right. Agenda item number 4 is electing the vice chair, the chair pro tem, along with the committee assignments. We have a slate that has been prepared by the ad hoc nominating committee and are certainly open to any suggestions or requests for alterations. Some of the things are kind of set or contingent upon other things, but nonetheless, we have it. So to start discussion purposes, I'll just make a motion to approve the present slate. To start discussions, ask if there's a second for that.
Aguirre will second.
All right, thank you. Second by Councilmember Aguirre. With that, let me open it up. Let me ask the clerk if there is any public request to speak on this item.
There are none, Chair.
Okay. Any board member comments or questions? You can just unmute yourself and go for it. I don't see any hands raised.
Chair. I have a question. I'm hearing an echo. This is Monica Montgomery stepping off. I want to know if there are any additional seats for public security. We may have interest from one other board member, and I just want to make sure that that's a possibility.
If you would like to add another seat, we can certainly do that. That is no problem at all. And presently, you're also at 6 members, so if you add a 7th, you'll ensure you have an odd number. So that would be no problem at all. If someone is interested in joining the Public Security Committee, we can amend the motion on the table to add someone.
Okay. Well, I would like to add Board Member Sean Elo Rivera, if he is willing to serve on this committee as well.
Wonderful. So I'll take that as an amendment, friendly amendment to the motion on the table. Which I will accept. I assume the second of the motion will as well. Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. Anyone else?
Also, just really quick, I want to thank the nominations committee for all of your hard work and nominations.
Thank you. And yeah, thank you to those members who joined with us. All right, hearing no other board member comments or questions, we have a motion by myself, a second by Council Member Aguirre to approve the 2021 slate of MTS committee and outside agency appointments with the addition of Councilmember Sean Elo Rivera to the Public Security Committee. With that, all in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right, that motion carries unanimously. We'll now move to the consent calendar. I'll ask the clerk if there's any requests from the public to pull items from the consent calendar.
There are none, Chair.
I'll ask board members if there's any board member desire to pull items or comments you wish to make.
Chair, I would like to, I still have a couple questions on item number 16, the security services contract. Yep.
Why don't we go ahead and pull that, Councilmember Montgomery? We'll just pull it. We'll have a brief kind of staff presentation, and then we can any folks can ask questions, and we can have a deliberation on that.
Any other requests?
All right. I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar minus item 16, which we will take next. Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Councilmember Moreno?
That was Vice Chair Sotelo Solis.
Ah, Vice Chair Sotelo Solis. Sorry, good to see you.
Good morning.
We have a motion by myself, a second by Vice Chair Sotelo Solis to approve the consent calendar minus agenda item 16. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. That motion carries unanimously. We'll now move to agenda item 16. This is security services contract extension. I would ask Sharon Cooney to just give us a brief walkthrough of this item, and then we can go to board member questions. Sharon?
Yes, of course. Good morning, board members. I wanted to put this on consent as a six-month extension past the date of the existing contract. Because, one, we had a new director coming in. He just started this week, and we wanted to give him an opportunity to kind of assess what was going on with the RFP process. But we also were interested in going to locations where the bidders were actually performing the work in other cities. So we were hoping to do that, then the increased COVID-related shutdowns occurred, and we really didn't feel it was safe for our staffs to travel. So one, we have the opportunity afforded us by new leadership, and then two, we also really would like that opportunity to go and really get a sense as to how the bidders were operating in other locations. So that's why we're requesting that extra 6 months on this existing contract. And you know, it's a relationship that we've had with the contractor so far, where we do want to make sure that you know, our bidding process is fair to all bidders, not just to the incumbent. So that's really in a nutshell why we're doing this. I do have a member of our procurement, our manager of procurement, Sam Elmer, is here. I'm not certain if you have any specific questions to the request for the extension, but he can certainly add them. And then our new head of passenger safety is here as well, Al Styler, and he can also talk with you about what he perceives to be the benefits of extending the contract. Oh, and we do have a public comment. If you would like to hear that first, that's your prerogative. Okay, go ahead and queue up the public comment.
David Roger, we will unmute you now.
Thank you. I'm a native San Diegan, 65 years old, been riding MTS for years and years. And I really don't think that MTS should be spending $5 million for groups of people to carry guns to check tickets. And as we've made videos and stuff of MTS's really lack of security and security guys checking tickets when people are not wearing masks and asking for tickets but not talking about masks on the trolleys, I really think MTS needs to rethink its security and ticket checkers. Thank you.
With that, we'll answer any questions.
Yeah. Any board member questions? Councilmember Montgomery, step.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Sharon, for the explanation. I did want to know why, outside of some of the things that were mentioned in the staff report, why this would be a six-month extension based on the fact that the RFP already, you know, went out. I guess my question with regard to the travel is, do you know or have an idea of the cities that you would like to go to? My concern is that we would, again, start to run up on that December 2021 time, and that, you know, we would be going through this again. So I just want to know if you have a timeline set out. I know it's hard with the restrictions and the health and safety concerns, but is there at least something that we're shooting for, and what are those cities that you would be wanting to visit?
Yeah, this is Sam Elmer, Manager of Procurement. Just a couple of comments to that. We're looking at going to their back office operation to see how their administrative work is performed. One of the firms is located here in San Diego, so we go to their back office, but the other one is up in the LA County area, Pasadena area, that we want to go look at their back office and see how they're operating, and that was part of the delay going up there. And then the six-month term just allows us to process that. Our goal is to bring the contract to the board in June or July for ratification of a new contract that would allow for a transition period for a potential new provider to transition staff and operations and be ready for a January 1st start date.
Okay. Well, I will go ahead and the item with those concerns, but I would like an update to Public Security Committee as needed.
And Chair Fletcher, Bill Sankey here. I'd also like to second that remark and also correct maybe a misperception that the board may be receiving from public comment there. The weekly reports we receive for the activities on our trains and on our buses include assaults against our drivers, our employees, all sorts of mischief at our stations, and even ruder and cruder things involving women and being assaulted. Our security presence is significant on the trains for not just fare checking, and I'm proud of the job that the guys are doing for us, guys and gals are doing for us now. And with that, as I said, I second the motion.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any other board member questions or comments? All right, hearing none, we have a motion by Council Member Montgomery Stepp, a second by Council Member Sankey to approve agenda item 16. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that motion carries unanimously. We're going to defer closed session until after our report items. I'll let the board members know we only have one closed session item. It should not take us long. So we can finish our open session meeting and then adjourn into closed session. The next four items are informational items only, but they are a good update on a variety of things that are kind of central to what MTS is working on. And so we want to give staff the time to make a presentation. We'll start with agenda item 45. This is the Pronto Fare Collection System implementation, along with the fare study update. And I know that there will be some comments and questions surrounding this item. So I'm gonna turn it over to Rob to walk through a presentation on the Pronto system, along with the corresponding actions that have to be considered by our board. Rob.
Thank you, Chair Fletcher. Good morning, board. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. My name is Rob Shoup. I'm the Director of Marketing Communications, and I'm joined by Israel Maldonado, who's our fare administrator, and he's the project manager extraordinaire on to lead this new fare collection system for MTS and NCTD. This is a regional fare collection system. So what we want to go over today briefly is why the new system is needed, how Pronto works and what benefits it brings our riders, the project timeline and estimated costs, and then we want to talk to you about the proposed fare changes that keep the system revenue neutral. So for the past couple of weeks, I want to let you know that we've done a series of outreach to the public. We did three public hearings on the proposed fare changes, and we updated the public on Pronto. Earlier this week, we also had a community advisory committee meeting in which we updated people on Pronto. And one of the oft-asked questions is, you know, why are we making this change? Why is it necessary? And that's kind of an easy question to answer. It's absolutely necessary that we go forward with a new fare collection system. Our present system was purchased in 2003. It was implemented several years later. But all of the hardware associated with the system is at the end of its useful life, and in some cases beyond the end of its useful life, and even spare parts are difficult to find. Beyond that, the software that drives the system is also, you know, almost 20 years old. And technology, as we all know, has made leaps and bounds progress since then. And so the current system does not provide the functionality that people come to expect in a 5G world. So this new system is going to provide that. We recognized these shortcomings back in 2016 and began a very robust effort to identify the best possible system for our riders. We brought in other agencies from around the country into MTS for a two-day workshop to really learn from them, you know, what kind of systems that they were integrating, what the pain points were, what the lessons learned were, so that we could go into the process of selecting a fare collection system developer with open eyes and a lot of information. We developed from that a white paper and a concept of operations that detailed every aspect of this new fare collection system so that we would get detailed responses to our RFP. We did get several responses. We narrowed that down after a very lengthy process to three providers. And then we went to the cities where those systems were incorporated, Portland, Vancouver, and Philadelphia, to really learn firsthand from the agencies, not from the providers, but from the agencies and the lessons learned from integrating those new systems into their transit system. From all of that, that we then selected Innit. Innit is the provider of the TriMet system in Portland. It's called HOP, and our benefits of Pronto are going to be very much the same as in Portland if you've been there. So how does Pronto work? What are the benefits it's going to bring to our riders? It has two primary advantages. One is that it's in real-time communications. That means that there's no delay when people want to add value to their Pronto account or to add a pass. Today with Compass Card, the delay could be up to 72 hours depending on the circumstances. So this will provide a real clear benefit to our riders. The other one is that riders will always get the best fare. You know, no matter how many times they ride in one day, they'll never be charged more than a day pass. Likewise, no matter how many times they ride in a month, they'll always get that they'll never be charged more than a monthly fare. That allows them to incrementally add value to their account over time. They do not have to pay up front for that monthly fare. Of course, there are some riders that prefer that option, and we will continue to have that option so you can pay up front for a month pass. The other benefits, again, real-time communications. So we're going to have a new mobile app. You can add value to your account on the fly. If you recognize your account's running low on the trolley, you can add value to your account. You'll be able to track progress on your phone or online toward a monthly pass or a day pass so you can see where you are. Multiple cards can be managed from one account, meaning one family member could add cash to the cards of several children. So that's a big advantage over Compass Card too. And one of the things that we really want to ensure in this system was that it was open architecture to allow future integrations as technology advances so that our system keeps up with technology. Just a few of the other rider benefits. Right now, people can go to about 60 outlets, retail outlets in our system, to buy Pronto cards or to add value and passes to the Pronto cards. We want to extend that up to, we want to launch with 100 locations, and we want to grow that fairly rapidly to 400 or more. So again, that's going to be a big advantage for our customers, particularly people who prefer to pay cash. They'll have all of these locations in which they can update their Pronto accounts. Kind of already gone over the new mobile features, but again, you'll be able to, on your phone, you'll be able to see every trip you've taken and how much has been decremented from your account. So you can have a real accounting of how you're riding transit. And the online capabilities are going to be expanded too. We have a number of institutional partners out there, businesses such as the City of San Diego, that provide hundreds of passes a month to their employees. Our new portal is going to make that very intuitive and easy to use. So we also get asked why Pronto and why Purple. I do want to emphasize again that this has been a regional effort. You know, we've been working with North County Transit District all along the way to develop the features of our system, and certainly the Pronto branding has been a collaborative effort. Pronto was tested with our riders. It really was the name that kind of the characteristics of quick, easy, and convenient are contained in Pronto. I really think it's a great name to explain the advantages of this new system. Pronto is also easily understood in multiple languages, so that's great. And then the Pronto Purple is becoming my new favorite color, but it's a combination of MTS Red and NCTD Blue. But one of the advantages of this too is that it's a very distinctive color. One of our goals is to be on the end cap of retail outlets and the gift card mall. And if you go to a grocery store and look at that card and imagine this Pronto packaging in that mall, you'll see how it's going to stand out and be really recognizable for our riders. Again, the transition of this is going to be very critical. We are at the very beginning stages of announcing this to the public. We don't want to get too out front of this. Israel's going to kind of go over our timeline, but this summer is going to be very key. We're going to start a very robust communication effort now that will, you know, encompass all of those tactics out there, including advertising and earned media and community events and partner toolkits and social media, all those kinds of things. The real key period will be that 1 month transition in which both systems will be in operation. That's our opportunity to go out into our transit centers, to partner with our social service agencies and our business partners and our retail partners to exchange cards with our customers to ease that transition. But again, this is going to be a massive effort. We have a great in-house capability now to produce videos, and we'll have a lot of video tutorials to take people through, and that will be on our website. So again, this is going to roll out over the next 6 months, but it's going to be a very intensive effort to make sure that everybody is aware of Pronto, its benefits, and how to transition their accounts. I think I'm going to hand it over to Israel now to go over what's next.
Thank you, Rob. There. Hello, everyone. So what's next? So a lot of exciting work. Just later this month, we'll begin breaking ground on the construction to expand our validator sites at high ridership stations with high transfer points. These include 12th and Imperial, San Ysidro, City College, Palomar, and Old Town. This same month, we've also started the installation of the bus validators. So we're starting pretty early just to give us enough time. Next month, we'll begin even more exciting work with the deployment of ticket vending machines and station validators all throughout our system. In March, we will begin to define which retail outlets will be part of that 100 for launch. In April, we will start with bus fare box prototype installations, and the validator installs that I just mentioned will be ramping up in its final, towards its final stage. In May, we would begin a pilot with frequent riders. In June, we would have that 1 month full transition that Rob described. And in July, in August, we would finish installations and remove any of the old equipment. Exciting work takes time and money. And these are the projected costs for Pronto. The total capital cost stand at an estimated $40.7 million, of which MTS is responsible for 67%, or $27 million. NCTD is responsible for 18%, or $7.6 million, while Sandag is responsible for 13.8%, or $5.6 million. On the operational front, we have a total of 10-year cost at $34.5 million, of which MTS is responsible for 69%, or $23.8 million. NCTD is responsible for 17%, and Sandag for the remaining 13%. It's important to note that the capital costs are one-time costs that will provide much greater functionality over the next 15 years. The operational costs are for 10 years, for which MTS is responsible for about $2.3 million, which is on par with current Cubic Compass operational cost. But important to note here as well is the much improved greater functionality. Real-time communications, cloud-hosted system, integrated mobile ticketing, a PCI compliant system in open architecture, as Rob mentioned. So what are those details included in capital costs for MTS? Well, we are getting over 180 ticket vending machines, over 360 trolley station validators, over 680 bus validators and driver control units, 10 transit store point of sale devices, an account-based fare system, a back office that is PCI compliant, a Salesforce customer relationship platform that will allow us to better serve our customers, data warehouse, reporting system, an integrated mobile ticketing application, and a bus fare box upgrade. In regards to the operating cost detail, we will have 10 years of software maintenance, licensing, support, annual hosting, retail network coverage, merchant and gateway services, which allow us to process credit card payments, and zero commissions on mobile ticketing loads. Hardware and software are great, but without policy, these do not provide our customers with the greatest benefit. And this is why we launched a fare study in 2020 with the intent of building off our successful 2019 simplification, which reduced the catalog tremendously, making it easier for customers to understand which products to buy. A big cornerstone of this new system, one of its major capabilities, is the fact that it can support fare capping or best fare. So that is an important goal as well. We also wanted to align the youth cash fares with SDM fares, while recognizing also that we had to find a way to offset the projected reduced fare revenue. So in collaboration with Sandag, their consultant, and NCTD, we developed three scenarios, and we share these scenarios with the public. Scenario one would include a reduction of the youth one-way fare from 250 to 125. We would increase the adult one-way regional fare from 250 to 275. And we would also increase MTS access and NCTD lift from 5 to 550. Scenario 1, 2, and 3 include adding fare capping thresholds. For scenario 1, the fare capping threshold would stay at today's monthly fare prices of 72 and 23 for reduced fare. and the daily cap would stay at the $6 mark for adult and $3 for reduced fare. Scenario 2 would include everything that Scenario 1 included, except that there would be an increase to the monthly cap thresholds from 72 to 75 for adults and from 23 to 24 for reduced fares. Scenario 3 focused mainly on setting the caps at today's pricing of $72 and $23 for reduced fare for the monthly prices and of $6 and $3 for the daily pass for adult and reduced fare, but with the addition of reducing the youth one-way regional cash fare from $250 to $125 and no fare increase.
Israel, just real quick on this point, I think there will be a fair amount of questions. Can you walk through which of these are revenue neutral, meaning because of fare capping, which is going to reduce, that's an effective fare cut. There you go. Perfect.
Perfect segue. So scenario one would result in an estimated revenue loss of about $600,000, while ridership would increase by 0.06%. Scenario 2 provided an estimated revenue increase of about $616,000 with a ridership decrease of about 0.5%, while Scenario 3 produced the largest revenue decrease of $3.6 million with a ridership increase of 0.5%.
Perfect, thank you.
So we took these models, the scenarios, to the public over three sessions, all virtual, Saturday, on a weeknight, and on a weekday. We had over 270 registrants. We had over 150 participants, and we received great feedback. The big takeaways were that participants understood best fare. Best fare is definitely perceived as a positive, and the funding gap was also well understood. But participants did not want the funding gap to be filled by increasing fares. We heard that as well. So a lot of exciting work ahead, a lot of great news coming, and I'll turn it over to the board for questions.
Thank you. Before we get to board questions, just to walk through kind of the process surrounding this. Obviously, Pronto is moving. I think there's a lot of excitement. It's been 5 years. In the planning process. Fare capping is something we've heard forever folks want. It makes sense. That seems like a no-brainer across the board on both Pronto with all the features it has and the fare capping. The question I think that we're the bulk of what we're doing, and certainly questions can come on anything surrounding Pronto or fare capping, anything at all. But the question we have to decide as a board is our vote on making adjustments to the fare system is purely advisory. We make an advisory vote. The statutory authority to actually change the fare system resides with SANDAG. By practice, they will not take it up or will not consider anything that we have not endorsed moving forward. And then like in any budget, we're gonna have to make decisions. If we're gonna do something that's gonna cut the revenue that comes in, then we're gonna have to make corresponding budget adjustments in other places if we're going to do something that increases. And so that's no different than any decision we all make on a daily basis in our own jurisdiction. So that's kind of the framework. This would could come back as early as February. It doesn't have to. We could spend a little bit more time on it if we wanted for us as a board to make a recommendation to SANDAG of any changes we would like to see. But again, the fare capping will be a decrease in revenue into MTS. And so the question is, do we want to simultaneously make decreases in youth fee and senior fee? And then are we going to make those up, or are we going to try and figure out how to absorb reductions throughout other things? So with that, let me give Sharon just a minute to give you all just her quick thoughts on what we're facing and what we're doing. And then we'll go to board members' comments and questions.
Thank you, Chair Fletcher. Right now what we're doing is we're going out for public outreach, and ultimately what we want to do is get people's input on the process. So we know there is an expense, at least the model shows that there's an expense with fare capping, but we really do believe it's a strong benefit for our riders, especially for those people who are, you know, day to day living on a very tight budget for their household. So It will allow them to access our system in the least expensive way possible. And so the goal is definitely we want to put that in with Pronto this summer. But, you know, I would be not fiscally true to what I owe you as board members if I didn't tell you that there's a cost associated with that and that there are ways that we could meet that cost. I also want to let you know that sometimes in these outreaches, we get input from people that we hadn't thought of. I do remember one time we were going out for a service change, and we asked the public, well, what do you think about these service changes, service cuts, because we were in a real fiscal challenging time. And the public told us, well, I'd pay more if you would keep these services. So that's what we're trying to listen to right now. And with that input and feedback, we will come back to you as a board, and we will tell you this is what we've heard, and this is what we believe you, we would recommend. There's no, science to the fact that you could also, a lot of times, agencies will go through with a fair change that is incremental, meaning they do it over time. So you might say, okay, in 2 years, we're going to increase the fare to address this cost of fare capping. And then you may not decide to put it in place at that time. So there's a lot of different options for you. And right now, we're really in that fact-finding stage and really listening to our riders.
Perfect. All right. So I imagine we'll have a fair number of questions. You can either post in the chat if you want to speak, and I can just get a little queue going. Might be a little more orderly. But if anyone wants to jump in first.
Chair, we have a public comment.
Oh, okay. Let's do our public comment first, and then when we come back, we'll go to our vice chair.
Carolina Martinez, you will be unmuted now.
Okay, you should be able to hear me now. Hi, my name is Carolina. I'm with the Environmental Health Coalition. Thank you for the report. We're super excited about the new system and also about purple and aqua blues, especially. But we're concerned about the consideration to increase the system, the fares at this point, especially during a pandemic. We want to incentivize folks to actually use transit. And the increase will definitely have an impact in our communities. We support scenario 3, and we realize that there are expenses with the implementation of the new system. So I actually really appreciate what Sharon just brought up, and that it could be phased. So why not consider a delayed increase and look at the next 2 years? We're definitely experiencing a lot of uncertainty right now, but we don't know what's going to happen a year from now. We don't know how we're going to transition out of the pandemic. So it would be a very strong consideration to delay the increase and phase it later if that's something that needs to be done. But right now, it's just not the right thing to do, especially if we want to incentivize our communities in particular to take transit pre and post pandemic, or during the pandemic and post pandemic. So we would like to ask that you do not increase the fares at this point. It will have a huge impact in our communities. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. We'll go first to the Vice Chair, Alejandro Sotelo Solis.
Okay, I have been unmuted by the organizer. Thank you, Chair. I was hitting it a couple times. Well, my question is twofold. One, I know that because we are considered a special district with the transportation, have we, and I know we were going to lobby hard on various levels with CARES Act money to see, how we could potentially offset, those costs, because at one point we were excluded and then we, so I would love to see from staff, if we were to do a combination of maybe some reduction, could we backfill with CARES Act money, knowing that it would be for a temporary period that would help us, generate revenue again, offset by a CARES Act money. I'd love to hear from staff if that's even a possibility, so that as we start thinking, okay, the revenues may be impacted, but it will be offset by CARES Act money. And then I have a second question once staff is able to answer that first one there, Chair.
Chair Fletcher, if I could, I can answer that. So we are going to have in our next agenda item a discussion about our subsidy revenues, and we will talk a bit about CARES Act as well. But I do believe that, you know, we will be looking at potentially some kind of promotional fares once the you know, the COVID crisis is subsiding and we're trying to get riders back onto our system. We've been talking with NCTD about that as a sort of cross-marketing type of thing. So that is certainly something that we will be considering. And again, it's really about budgeting, and we will be hosting a budget development committee meeting this spring very quickly, so we can start having those kind of discussions with the committee members and then ultimately bring something to the board. But it's certainly something that we want to focus on, but we are cognizant of the fact that we so far have only gotten the one infusion of money from the federal government. And if the Biden administration is supportive of more, then our decisions could be very different. So I'd put that out there.
Yeah, I think that's
Chair. No, you're good. You have a second question.
Yeah, I think that's essential for us to know that may be something we can offset. The second question is, do we know if it would be possible, one, to see via the scenarios how it would impact our greenhouse gas emissions, and whether it be lowering or increasing our greenhouse gas emissions via each of the scenarios for our, you know, our own records. Is that possible?
Can I ask that the slide be pulled up about ridership impacts? Yeah, I mean, the ridership impacts are really what's the impact. So if you reduce riders on transit, then you will likely have an impact on GHG emissions. So, but the ridership impacts are really small associated with each of the scenarios. So I don't know that you would see a substantive climate impact.
Okay, and through Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, I know that there is a social equity analysis, and I don't know if this is considered part and parcel to that whenever there is that type of increase. So I'd be curious how we view, or again, knowing just what the numbers are here via this slide, the FAIR model projections, if we are considering that being our social equity analysis.
Correct. There was social equity analysis provided by the consultant from SANDAG, and it was positive, but we can have SANDAG provide those details.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. I think it's really important for members of the public to see and what the exact lens was that was used when we talk about that equity component. Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, staff.
Israel, if you could send that social equity report, just distribute that to all the board members. I think that would be helpful. And you know, we have a lot of options. We can obviously delay any potential impact to an out year. We could phase it in over time. I mean, we have a variety of options. We just have to deal with the math of what that means. And we do have some CARES Act funding. You know, we have been utilizing that to stabilize our workforce. We haven't laid anyone off. We haven't cut any salaries, and to get our service levels back to pre-pandemic levels, again, with the significant lowering of revenue because of COVID. But we have, as a board, we have a variety of options. We just have to assess and decide which path we want to move down. Other board members. I don't see any.
I'm sorry, Chair Fletcher, this is Joe Galvez.
Hey, Jill, go ahead. It is yours.
Thank you. What will be the cost of the initial card purchase? Will it be in the $2 range, or is there any flexibility in adjusting that initial card acquisition rate?
Hi, this is Rob.
Thank you.
During the transition, we're going to pass out as many free cards as possible. Later in the program, the cards, there will be a $2 cost to the cards, just as there is with Compass Card. But our main effort during that transition is to get new cards in the hands of our customers without charge.
Thank you.
All right, any other board member comments?
Chair Fletcher. Ladies first, go ahead.
Chair, I don't know if you want me to proceed.
Yes, Member Moreno, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you guys for your presentation. First and foremost, I want to commend MTF staff for aggressively pursuing this new fare collection system. I think it's going to finally make stored value possible, and it's going to encourage more choice ridership. I obviously am very concerned about the increased fares, especially at this time. There's a lot of hardship for many of our riders, and I look forward to the public hearing on this just to get more feedback from our community. I have received a letter from Circulate San Diego that's requesting that free transfers be included as part of the fare change. I have to say I agree with Circulate. Free transfers would do a lot to encourage more choice ridership. Will MTS staff consider making these changes?
Sharon, can you walk through the fare transfer issue? And I think some of the existing board members are probably familiar, but some of the new members would probably be a good update on the history of that issue and where we are.
Yeah, so years ago, when we first instituted Compass Card, we got rid of transfers on the buses. At that time, we had this archaic situation where the drivers were carrying pieces of paper and handing them out to riders. And, you know, we bought a smart card system in the early 2000s because we wanted to get away from the idea that there would be that much driver handling of fare media and that the customers could do everything electronically and manage their accounts. And so we did away with bus transfers at that time. At the same time, we instituted a day pass so that people could ride inexpensively all day. What we found is that most of our riders will transfer at least twice on the system. And so at that time, the day pass was $5 for adults, and that would allow them to ride all day. 2 years ago, we increased the cost of the day pass to $6, and so that's a little over double the one-way cash fare, which is $2.50. So if you're taking three trips, the $6 day pass is still a great deal. At that same time, we had left in place an old legacy from the old system where we allowed trolley riders to transfer from one trolley line to another in the same direction in a two-hour window. And why we did that at the time, I can't recall, but it isn't something that really there were that many riders still using that methodology, and other than, you know, the folks that ride in the downtown area who hop on and hop off a lot. But the challenge for that one is definitely enforcement, in that it's hard to tell if somebody is still in that two-hour window, and it was hard to tell if you were still going in the same direction. Plus, it was easy to hand off your paper one-way fare to some other rider and let them continue on your trip and use it for free. So we just said, all right, let's make the rail and the bus exactly the same, and there's no free transfers. Then everybody will be using the day pass. At the same time that we did away with that on the rail, which was 2 years ago, we did implement a brand new senior, disabled, and youth day pass, which is significantly discounted. It allows for them to travel all day for $3, which is a benefit that a lot of, especially seniors and youth advocates were requesting. And so we saw that as a give back so that those people could better access our system in a cost-effective manner. In the same regard, in this proposal that we've put forward now with Pronto, is that we are trying to right-size the youth one-way ticket fare with the SDM one-way ticket fare. So making it half of what it costs for an adult to travel. So anytime we do recommend to the board that we add something, you know, in order to be fiscally prudent, we do try to mitigate for that by adding some benefits or some other reductions in fares, et cetera, new products, things like that. So anyway, that's where we are. I cannot recommend to you that we try to reinstate a transfer system that years ago was archaic. To try to do it again, it just wouldn't make sense for our riders.
I appreciate that explanation, but I think it's a matter of policy, right? And I have to agree with Circulate. We are trying to encourage choice ridership on MTS. I think a lot of cities in the United States have figured it out. And I would encourage our staff and this board to look into at least providing that transfer, a free transfer, essentially. So that concludes my comments, but thank you for the presentation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember Moreno. On that question, I'd ask Sharon, could we, at the February meeting, get a presentation on this issue? Again, kind of walking through the history along with walking through what impacts we think both fiscal and operational would happen, kind of so the whole board can really weigh the pros and cons of this item as we consider the broader change to the fare system.
Sure, we can do that.
Okay. Is that, Councilmember Moreno, will that help if we just have a presentation specifically on this item with kind of a walkthrough of the analysis of it for our next board meeting?
Yeah, I think it moves in the right direction, but I think it's a matter of policy and deciding where we want to allocate our funds, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. But yes, thank you.
Yep, happy that will work well. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Elo Rivera and then Councilmember Sankey. Councilmember Elo Rivera.
Thank you, Chair Fletcher. A big thank you to staff for the report. Rob and Israel for the presentation. I just want to just appreciate the shift in funding. The way that it will provide benefits to those who don't have the cash up front to pay for the monthly pass. There's conversations that are often overlooked about the high cost of poverty, and this is a great example. Monthly passes are a great example of how not having enough money at the beginning of the month to pay for a monthly pass can end up costing you greatly over the course of that month. And I'm glad to see that this new system will cap fares so that our lowest income folks are not most impacted in a way that they have been in the past. So thank you for that. Really appreciate that. I do have a couple questions with respect to the potential of change to fares. And they mostly have to do with the process. Everywhere where we are, whether it's at City Council or the other boards that I'm serving on, we want to make sure that we're really analyzing things through a racial equity and justice lens. I appreciate Mayor Sotelo Solis's request and look forward to reading that report. But I do have a question about process in terms of community engagement, in terms of how MTS made sure that the most impacted folks were going to be able to participate in the community engagement efforts that have taken place so far. I know that there's many challenges as a result of COVID, nonetheless, the effort has to go on and it'd be even more intentional. So can you all share a little bit about what you all did to make sure that folks most impacted by potential changes would have an opportunity to participate in the forums that you held?
Hi, this is Rob. We did a number of communication efforts to ensure that everybody was aware of our public outreach meetings. One of our best tools is to put notifications on board all of our vehicles. And so we had what we call a take one. We post those in all of our vehicles that let people know of the dates. We spent about $20,000 on advertising, both in print advertising and in digital advertising. So we were able to target specific communities. We did some social media outreach on this. So we have a Rider Insider newsletter with about 10,000 people on it. There's, I'm just trying to think of what the other main effort, but the partner toolkits. Since we started the Community Advisory Committee meeting and we've done free ride days, we always develop a digital toolkit for our partners to distribute, and so that was another method by which the public meeting notices were distributed.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And that was done in multiple languages, not just English and Spanish?
Primarily English and Spanish. We did do some Asian language advertisements in print. All of our materials are available in any language that is requested of us. And that information is posted in our take ones.
Great. Thank you so much. And finally, I just want to extend an offer from our team, from the Council District 9 office in San Diego, to help spread the word about additional opportunities for community engagement. We have a multilingual staff, and you know, we definitely want to make sure that there's as much engagement as possible.
All right, thank you. We'll go to Councilmember Sankey.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I noticed Mayor Salas also waving her hand in on the screen, so be sure and get her in the queue as well. I think it's tough to make budget decisions with one-time money. I'd be worried about long-term impacts to our budget based on fare changes that we were going to backfill with one-time money. That troubles me a little bit, but it certainly could be part of the calculation in the short term. This feels really familiar to me, like we just did this a couple of years ago, and as Sharon referenced, we in fact did raise fares 25 cents single ride very short time ago. And when we were doing that process, several scenarios were brought forward just like that, and I recall vividly asking the consultant and staff, because all of the revenue projections that were shown resulted in ridership declines. And that troubled me. I said, bring me a fare structure that actually builds ridership, because that's what we're trying to do. And in this instance, we have scenario one and scenario two, which marginally, but still make a dent in the ridership numbers in the positive direction. And so I'm encouraged by that. I think at some point over time, the revenue burden on the public is gonna need to be shed from the public to us, whether it's subsidy money or some other money that we're going to have, because we need to keep our fares competitive and low. And as Councilmember Ela Rivera pointed out quite clearly and appropriately, the lowest folks in our economic ladder are the ones who need us the most. And so I frankly, you know, anything we can do to find ways to accommodate ridership at that economic level is a good thing. And I guess my other thought is, if we have to raise fares, let's do it in a way that that can increase ridership. But when we start getting up to $70, $80 a month, I think you can lease a car for 100 and change. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're still priced competitively and not driving people to make choices that are worse for the environment and may seem like a good one in their own pocketbook, but by the time we get up to where we're now priced the same cost of an inexpensive car payment or car lease, then that's not good for us long term. So again, I think fare capping has a lot to do with making sure that we stay competitive. And so as we nibble up 25 cents at a time, or $5 to $6, you know, and then on a monthly basis, we start to really impact people's pocketbooks and hopefully influence them in a good way with our structure to ride us, and not in a bad way to make other choices that are worse for the environment and result in ridership declines for us. So thank you. That's my thoughts.
Thank you, Councilmember Sankey. We'll go to Mayor Salas, and then Councilmember Montgomery step after Mayor Salas. Mayor Salas?
So yeah, thank you very much, and good morning to everybody. Sorry I was late, but thank you, Chair Fletcher, because I was at the opening of the Chula Vista Super Center for vaccines at the Cirrus site. So that's a great thing for the South Bay and for Chula Vista, very needed. And I also wanted to welcome all the new board members that I see sitting on the MTS board. I think you're going to enjoy serving on. It is absolutely my favorite committee to be on. So welcome all the new members, and I hope that your time here is as enjoyable as mine is. I wanted to again support Vivian Moreno in taking another dive. I know we've looked at it before about the transfer. But we know, as she stated, we know that there have been other agencies that continue to offer this transfer station. And even though our system was archaic in the past, doesn't mean that it has to be archaic in the future. And I think if we look at the scenario of those people that are really transit dependent on us, that allowing that transfer is very, very important to their being able to get to and from work at a price that is more affordable. Having people have to pay for bus transfers or bus fares, two and three times to get to their job is really difficult. So I would encourage us to, take another look at it, review other agencies that have done it with different technology that does not require that paper transfer. I think it can be done, and we have the obligation to look at that. So those are my comments, and really good report so far. Thank you.
Thank you. We will go, and we'll do the transfer issue. We'll get a standalone presentation and discussion on that at our next board meeting. I think it'd be helpful to all of us. Next, congratulations, Mayor Salas, on the Chula Vista Superstation. We're very excited about that. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Montgomery Steph.
Thank you, Chair. I really don't have much more to say. I've had questions about the CARES Act funding and subsidizing that. I know we're going to talk more in detail about that funding in our next presentation. Agree with the transfer issue, definitely the conversation around fares. I've just taken a hard stance on any kind of increase in fares and fees right now based on the time that we're in and based on the impact of so many people in our region. So I want to be consistent and have that same stance here. I do remember one of the first votes I took at the Sandag Transportation Committee a couple years ago was regarding fare increases. So it has not been a very long time. But the last thing I just want to say is about the Title VI report. I do also remember that report back then being attached to that item, and it really, it's actually the requirements and what Title VI asked for, I think is a dated analysis and methodology. And it may have changed, but I do remember reading the analysis and saying, this does not really help us. And so my ask at that time from Sandag was to kind of use those parameters and create some of our own guidelines for social equity when we're talking about fare increases and the like. Maybe once we get that report, then we can revisit that. But I do remember just not being happy with what was in the report and helping me analyze like what true impact this would have. So I just recall that. So I could be recalling something that is wrong, but I do want to dig into the Title VI, and hopefully if it's legally permissible,
establish some of our own parameters that build on what Title VI was trying to do at that time. So I just wanted to throw that in there, and definitely looking forward to the conversations that we have, really digging into that equity conversation and seeing how we can come up with solutions on our end. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other board member comments on this item? It's informational, so we have nothing to vote on, but want to see if any other comments or questions from board members.
I just have a quick comment, Mr. Chair.
Of course.
Thank you. I just want to thank staff for all their work and the great presentation. I definitely have concerns regarding the fare increases as well. And I think that, you know, I'm leaning towards scenario three here because there is a supplemental funding with COVID CARES Act funding. I also think that, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to the information that will be provided with the Title VI report and looking at this through a social equity lens, because I really want to see what the social impact is on our riders. And overall, I think that putting a cap on the monthly passes is important, and I really like that this is making it very efficient and streamlining that process. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Chair Fletcher, Stephen Whitburn.
Yes, Councilmember Whitburn, the floor is yours.
I'm sure this conversation has been had in the past, but and I don't need an answer to it now, but as a new board member, I would be very interested in hearing at some point whether other systems calibrate or discount fares based on income or ability to pay, and what it would take to consider something like that. But I'm sure that's an involved discussion, but something I would like to become educated on. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. Anyone else? All right. We clearly have some work to do to kind of assess and figure out what direction we would like to move forward as an agency, and we'll pick that up at our next board meeting, and then along with all of your individual actions between now and then. With that, let's move to agenda item 46, subsidy revenue overview. Mike Thompson is going to give us this update to kind of just walk us through the overall numbers around our revenue operations. Mike.
Good morning. My name is Mike Thompson. I'm the Director of Financial Planning and Analysis here at MTS. Today I'm talking about MTS subsidy revenues, which are our non-operating revenues from federal, state, and local sources. And I wanted to further break that down. We categorize them as recurring revenue sources and non-recurring revenue sources, and you'll hear that throughout the presentation, so I just want to touch on it real quickly. Our recurring revenue sources are our more stable revenue streams. They're legislative and are formula-based, so we can count on those revenues pretty much coming in every year. And these are the primary funding sources that we'll keep in the operating budget, because we want to have recurring expenses being matched with recurring revenues to have a more stable operating budget. But these recurring revenue streams also fund a large portion of our capital improvement program, as we also need to keep our system in a state of good repair and keep the assets in a state of good repair. So our non-recurring revenue sources are one-time funding, and the stimulus funding for CARES is a very good example of this. It's a finite bucket. It's not going to be there for the long haul. It's there for a very specific period of time. The other types of non-recurring revenue sources we have are competitive or discretionary programs that we participate in every year. These are basically project-based, where we will submit an application for a fixed pool of funding for a very specific funding source with very specific funding award focus. So these projects, I mean, the awarding is not always based on the actual project. Sometimes it's based on regional prioritization, and sometimes it's based on whatever the best fit for that program-specific focus is. So there is some uncertainty on all this every year, but we do the best job we can applying for as many things as possible. Now, since these are project-based, they're typically included in the CIP. If that project is approved, then we'll start including that funding in future budgets. So I just wanted to clarify those two. Starting with our largest subsidy revenue source is sales tax generated. It is Transportation Development Act for the state of California. So of the base 7.25% sales tax, 0.25% of that comes to whatever is sold in Sandy Region comes to transit directly. So this is a recurring revenue that is apportioned every year by SANDAG. We share it between us and North County. And this is one of the major sources of funding for our operations, and also included a lot of funding for our capital improvement program. So to give you a sense of the scope of this revenue source, the total regional pool in San Diego County for fiscal year 20 was $148 million, and MTS received about $102 million of that last fiscal year. 60% about was in the operating budget, and $38 million was in the capital improvement budget. Another state sales tax revenue is our local Transnet revenue. That is just in San Diego County. It is 0.5% of all the sales tax assessed in this region. Now, this is revenue flows through SANDAG. It is, again, recurring every year. One thing about the sales tax revenues is though they are very stable, we're going to get them every year, they tend to move with the economy a little bit more than other revenue sources. So we do have those risks as well. Last fiscal year, the region received $306 million. There's a portion that comes off the top for administration, and then the table on the right shows how that money flows on the SANDAG side. So the big blue slice is major corridors program. Now that is major construction projects. Things like Midcoast trolley line extension are funded through that. That's the capital piece of those improvements that were approved by the Transnet program. The next major piece is the purple slice. That is the local system improvements. That's basically for roads, highways and roads. So that is nothing, transit doesn't really see any portion of that. The green slice, about 17%, is for transit system improvements. That is a recurring formula-based revenue source for MTS. So that is actually for both NTS and for North County Transit District, or NCTD. So it's a 70-30 split. Whatever that cash receipts are, we get 70% of that. For fiscal year 20, that slice was about $33 million for MTS. The last little slice is that 8% for new BRT and rail operations. So the things that transit-related that they build with that major corridors program, they then have to fund the operations for that. Transnet funds the operations for that. That includes our superloop routes, our four BRT routes, and then starting in fiscal year 22, it will also start funding the Midcoast trolley line. So that cost recovery in FY20 was about $12 million, and then obviously that will grow when the Midcoast trolley line has come on board. Our next sales tax related revenue is state transit assistance. So this is a revenue from the state that is based on diesel fuel sales. So we get some portion of that sales goes into a bucket that funds transit. This is a recurring formula funding. It's administered by the state controller's office. It's basically distributed every year based on population and agency revenue and for that pool of money. So this money was augmented a few years ago by Senate Bill 1, or SB 1. So it used to be a smaller portion. They did add another bucket into this and made it a much larger apportionment for us. That also included a separate source of funding, a brand new separate source of funding, directly for state of good repair type capital improvements. So in the past, you go back 10 years, this was a very volatile funding source. We actually lost half of it 1 year and lost it completely in fiscal year 11. But since the resulting lawsuits out of that, there has been a more stable funding source starting in FY13, and then Senate Bill 1 increased it a little bit starting in FY18. So this funding is very flexible. It can be used for anything transit related. So we use it in both our operation budget and our capital budget. The FY20 total was about $33 million, and typically we had about $10 million in the operating budget, and whatever the remainder is will stay in the capital budget. We also get a lot of money from the federal government. It comes primarily through the Federal Transit Administration, or FTA. This is part of the Surface Transportation Reauthorization. The current legislation is called FAST, Fixing America's Surface Transportation. It has been in place since 2014 and will actually expire this September. So we're in our last year of FAST, and then we will need new legislation to be drafted and approved for this next federal fiscal year in federal fiscal year 21. So on a recurring basis, we get separate funding sources for different sections of the FTA regs. We get 5307 for urban, 5337 for state of good repair, 5339 for bus and bus facilities, and 5311 for rural operations. Now, basically, that is just different ways of how they slice the pie across the nation. They have different metrics they use to divide up that money. But in total, those recurring revenues were $92 million in FY20. We expect a similar number in FY21, and then we'll have to see what the new legislation looks like to understand what that's going to look like going forward. Now, this funding is a little bit different. I mean, the sales tax, whatever cash receipts we get, for federal funding, it's received on a reimbursement basis. So we get a portion of these money, we apply for grants, and then as we spend the money, we get reimbursed for it. So because of that delay, MTS prefers to use as much of these federal dollars to fund operations, specifically maintenance or preventive maintenance programs, and then whatever's left over, we put in the capital program. Now, that helps improve cash flows. It allows us to open and close these grants more rapidly. So that is the primary driver of that. But we also make sure to keep an eye on the capital program and not just steal from capital. So as we add additional funds to the operating budget, we put TDA back into the capital program to keep capital share whole. So you'll hear us talk about that, the PM swap with the operating budget and the capital budget. It's just a mechanism to allow us to spend the money faster. There's also many non-recurring funding sources for the FTA. The biggest one is the stimulus funding from last April. It's called the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act. So this, in total, was $25 billion for transit. It included a formula apportionment for MTS of $220 million as a one-time funding. Now, this is eligible on any operating expenses, so it's much more flexible than normal federal funding is, which makes it easier for us to spend it. And then the goals for this was to help with the financial impact of COVID-19, but also to keep jobs in place and keep service on the street. So that is what we have done with this funding so far. Is we, other than last spring when the pandemic first hit, and we had trouble keeping enough employees to put service on the street. Basically, starting in July 1, we've had full service levels on the street the entire year, even though passenger levels are 40% of normal, 40 to 50% of normal. So we've been able to keep that service on the street, allows for greater social distancing as well, and keeps the jobs in place as well. So last fiscal year, basically from March to June, we used $18 million of this CARES funding. For fiscal year 21 that we're in now, we expect it to be closer to $80 million. Well, we've used about $100 million over this first 18 months. That would leave us with $120 million. So if we have structural deficits next year and the year after of $40 to $60 million, we have two and a half years of revenue available to fill this deficit before we have to figure out how we're going to right-size the organization to match recurring revenues and recurring expenses. There was a second round of stimulus funding in December. It included another $15 billion for transit, but the way it is worded, MTS will not receive any funding from this on a formula basis. That formula funding is basically being used up by all the larger transit agencies. If there's any funding left over after those formulas are divvied out, there will be some competitive programs related to this, and we potentially could get some money there, but we are at this point not counting on receiving any money from that second round of stimulus funding. Other FTA non-recurring revenue streams. FTA offers many programs every year of competitive opportunities. So it allows us to look at what their criteria is and then find projects to apply for and take our chances with those application process. Bus and bus facilities is one such program. It's every year. It focuses on bus and related equipment and to construct bus-related facilities, including technology changes or innovations. So we have to sort of tailor programs, projects that we have coming up for this, and then apply for grants and hope for the best. Another one is low or no emission vehicle program. This is a smaller bucket of money that's available every year. It focuses on bus-to-bus facility projects and how to support low and zero emission vehicles. I mean, it's about $80 million a year, and California in total has been getting about $5 to $6 million a year, so it's not a very lucrative program at this point in time. Another smaller program is the Enhanced Mobility for Seniors program, assisting private nonprofit groups in meeting transportation needs of older adults and people with disabilities. We do apply for those grants every year. And then there's other small, even smaller FTA programs that just pop up here and there as funding becomes available. You can see four listed here, expedited project delivery, infrastructure condition grants, innovative coordinated access and mobility, integrated mobility innovation program. So they're very specific. It depends on if you have an immediate need for a program and have a project ready to go, if we can apply for those type of things. There are also other federal non-FTA grant programs each year. The Department of Transportation has a Better Utilizing Investments to Leverage Development program. It's called the BUILD program. And it's, since it's Department of Transportation wide, it includes not just transit agencies, but also all the State Department of Transportation offices as well. So it's much more competitive than our transit-focused grants from the FTA side. So this one is focused on surface transportation infrastructure, such as roads, bridges, transit, rail, ports, or intermodal transportation. And one thing about this is it is a pretty big pot of money, but the awards are also much larger as well, and they're looking for projects that have significant local or regional impact. And they tend to award projects that are where you're combined with other local sister agencies. Another non-FTA grant program is the FEMA's Transit Security Grant Program. We participate this every year. This focuses on protecting critical transportation infrastructure and the traveling public from terrorism. It is, again, a smaller program. We do get awards every other year, but they're very smaller in nature. Moving on to other non-federal sources of revenue, the state has a California Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund that actually funds a number of different things. So the state uses cap and trade auction proceeds to fund this greenhouse gas reduction fund. And then that fund then supports a number of programs, and two of those are specifically supporting transit. The first one is the Low Carbon Transit Operations Program, LCTOP. We receive this every year. It is formula funding that is administered by the State Controller's Office. It actually uses the same funding mechanism, same funding calculations that State Transit Assistant uses. And that was $6 million to MTS in FY20. Now, there's spending requirements on this funding. It needs to be spent on reducing greenhouse gas emissions and also benefiting disadvantaged communities. Disadvantaged communities is also an acronym for DAC. So MTS, and it's been around for a few years now, MTS has been using this funding primarily for the Zero Emission Bus or ZEB pilot project and ZEB purchases going forward. The other major program supported by this fund is the Transit Intercity Rail Capital Program. This is a competitive program. It happens every other year. It is fairly large dollars. And then you put your package of programs together, show how you're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and then they provide these discretionary awards. This is administered by Caltrans, and we have been successful with this program the first couple times we've gone through it. Other recurring subsidies, both state and local, as a Medi-Cal. We receive Medi-Cal revenue from the state for ADA paratransit services for trips that are to and from managed care providers. So it's a very small subset of our overall ADA paratransit trips. It's administered by the county, and in FY20, that was about $700,000. We received money from SANDAG for Fast Track. A portion of the I-15 managed lane revenues each year is allocated towards service in that corridor, and that money was about $8 million in fiscal year 20. Other local socials, about $1.5 million in total last fiscal year. City of San Diego money gives us some money. North County Transit funds some service for us, and UCSD also funds some service specifically in that area. Some other competitive programs that we participate in as we have projects and as these programs are actually offered. The California Energy Commission has periodic grant programs. They are focusing on advancing the state's transition to clean energy and transportation through innovation, efficiency, and the development and deployment of advanced technologies. We have participated in that in the past. California Transportation Commission has focus on reduced traffic, improving goods movement. So it's not specifically for transit, it's actually for other things as well. But increasing transit services is included in there. And also bicycle and pedestrian improvements is included in that as well. There was at one time environmental mitigation trust from Volkswagen for the state of California. This was a settlement out of Volkswagen's basically lying about their emissions. And that settlement was $423 million. It's supposed to be used for mitigating excess nitrogen oxide emissions. Basically, they came up with a program where you can get $180,000 per zero-emission vehicle, but that money is actually all used up, and MTS did not receive any when they applied for it at this point in time. So this next chart, it wouldn't be a finance presentation without some charts, looks at our competitive grant results over the last 4 years. So I looked at it two different ways. The first one is by the granting agency, so you can see 32 projects in total, $163 million of requested money, primarily through the FTA, but you can see also Caltrans projects and also DOT and FEMA and FWHA is the Federal Highway Administration. So of those 32 projects, we received 11 project awards, and those awards totaled $54 million over that period of time. I also sliced it a little different way, and I looked at those same projects by their function. So you can see 17 of the projects were bus and bus facility related, 6 were zero emission bus related, and then trolley, fare system, and security also had projects that we submitted during this period of time. Same $163 million, you can see we're mostly successful basically through the Caltrans, TRCP is all the dollars, and then all the bus facilities is primarily the federal and some Caltrans stuff as well. So my last slide is just giving you some sort of sense of the dollars for each funding stream. So I wanted to do 2 years, because since FY20 is the start of the COVID anomalies, I went back to FY19. And of this total pot of money, it's about $260 million in total. And that was about 70% of all the revenue MTS received for that fiscal year. You can see primarily it's federal and TDA that are the main drivers of where we receive our revenue. And this includes both the capital funding and the operating budget funding. It also includes both recurring and non-recurring. For FY19, we had about $15 million of non-recurring of that $260 million. And $15 million is sort of an average number over the last 10 years. We have about that much in non-recurring. You know, it doesn't happen even year to year, but on average, that's about an average year. So that's what an average year looks like. And you can see the other sales tax related funding of Transnet formula is purple and STA is orange. In FY20, it's actually a lot more money for subsidy-wise. It's $327 million, but $45 million of that, or 14%, was non-recurring in nature, led by the CARES funding, the $18 million of CARES funding that we used in the operating budget to balance the deficits. Everything else was fairly stable in FY19, from 19 to 20, on a recurring basis. We're not going to see those real big changes until FY21. When we have those numbers, we'll be able to show that next year. It'll be dramatic changes as we move to FY21. So that concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. I think that's a good walkthrough of it. And I just one point we have to all be very mindful of is we have a very significant operational deficit due to COVID. Obviously, our ridership revenue has plummeted, and we've been able to maintain service lines and our employees because of the CARES Act funding. And we don't yet know. I mean, we won't know probably until we get through most of 2021 how much that situation will stabilize. But we do have a significant ongoing structural deficit today based on the decline in ridership. And so it's just something we're going to have to monitor very closely as we move through the when we get in the recovery phase from COVID and really keep in mind as we move forward and make the decisions. So with that, are there any board member comments or questions on this item? Council Member Moreno.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I think transit funding can be very complex to understand. It's almost like an alphabet soup of state and federal programs. And even as a returning board member, I really appreciated this item. It's a very good refresher course. Just one quick question. President Biden has proposed an additional coronavirus relief package that includes additional funding for public transit. Do you anticipate that this funding is going to be allocated similarly to the CARES Act? And if so, how much might MTS expect to receive?
At this point in time, we have not seen any details of what that's going to be in that package. So we don't have any information yet as of how it's going to be distributed or even how much it is or how, what it's going to be focused on. So unfortunately, we don't have an answer yet.
Okay. Do we have lobbyists? Does MTS have lobbyists that...
Yes, we do have lobbyists that on the federal level and on the state level as well.
And are we getting any indicators from them?
We have not. We also participate with the American Public Transit Association, who is very active in these things as well, and we don't have any update from them yet either. I don't know if anyone's really aware of what's going to be proposed.
Okay. Well, thank you for this presentation again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember Moreno. Any other board member comments or questions?
Do you need a motion?
No, informational only.
Mr. Chair, quick question.
Yes,
I could. Thanks for that great report. In terms of the results category, we got 32 projects submitted, and we had 11 accepted. Relative to other peer agencies, is that low, high, or about right? And in terms of increasing the number of successful grant applications, do we have internal processes in place to make sure we have a little more fighting chance to get that project awarded number up?
Yes, we have. We basically apply for anything we can attach a project to. So we do whatever we can. Sometimes, admittedly, we're sort of grasping straws at some of these programs, and we're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, but we're doing the best we can to do that. We also reach out to our representatives and our lobbyists to get information as well about try to figure out exactly what they're focusing on this current fiscal year. So I mean, we do the best we can. We do as many things as we possibly can, and you know, we're just trying to be as aggressive as possible with this money.
All right, thanks, Mike. And one other point. We have an opportunity to check with cities like Seattle and San Francisco that receive federal and state subsidy money for their waterborne transportation systems. I know that's of interest to me, and I hope that's of interest to the other cities that may be able to take advantage of some water transportation, particularly as the waterfront in Chula Vista comes much more alive.
Okay. Yes, we will do that.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate that, Mike.
No problem.
Great report.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? I don't see any hands up. All right, Mike. Thank you. Thank you for that. Certainly appreciate the presentation. We'll now move to agenda item 47, MTS Safety Performance Annual Review. We will try and move fairly swiftly through this one and 48 Operation Budget Status, so we can get into a closed session. So with this, I will turn agenda item 47 over to staff for a presentation.
Good morning. I'm attempting to move a slide here. It doesn't seem to be moving. There we go. My name is David Bagley, and I serve as the System Safety Manager for the Rail Division. I've been with the agency for 25 years. I concurrently also serve as a Safety and Security Manager on the Mid-Coast Corridor Extension Project, and worked with the Rail Division to win the 2018 APTA Gold Award. So we're very proud of that. In July 6, 2012, President Obama signed into law something that was called MAP 21, Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century. There were some laws that originated from that the FTA has introduced. And I wanted to talk about these three laws because they do relate to funding for the agency. So 49 CFR 674 required state safety oversight agencies, which in our case is the California Public Utilities Commission, to submit a state safety oversight program. And that was approved on October 18, 2018. There was another law involving the Public Transportation Agency Safety Plan requirement for transit agencies to submit to the FTA. and the CPUC, which is our state safety oversight agency. The board approved that on July 30th, and we received subsequent letter of approval from the CPUC to our CEO, Sharon Cooney, on August 6th. 49 CFR 672, the Public Transportation Safety Certification Training Program, is also a requirement that requires anyone that has direct oversight over safety to become certified via the U.S. Department of Transportation, FTA. And I'm proud to say that MTS has reached that goal, and all employees that have direct oversight over safety successfully completed that program during calendar year 2020. We routinely meet with our executive leadership, Sharon Cooney, our CEO, and Wayne Terry, our Chief Operations Officer, and give updates related to safety. We do a month-by-month update on that. You can see up in the right corner, calendar year 2018, 2019, and 2020. And you can see that accidents are trending nicely in a downward direction. So that's good news for MTS there, and attributed to the great performance of our frontline employees and operators. We've been collecting data for quite some time, and that was a requirement of these new laws. And you can see that MTS has been committed to safety for many years now in tracking accidents. We investigate on behalf of the California Public Utilities Commission, and they formally adopt our accidents based on certification following each completion of investigation. Board members have often asked, how do we compare to other agencies within the state of California? So I have that here for you in a graph. So we talked about San Francisco, San Jose, Sacramento, LA Metro may come up in different presentations related to funding. And you can see that San Diego has been recognized by the CPUC as a high performer in relationship to safety. Part of this law also required for us to write safety performance measures into our agency safety plan. So we came up with doing this over a three-year period, collecting data and then establishing a baseline. So through 2017 and 19, you can see that the baseline was established at 0.12 per 100,000 revenue miles. And 2018 through 2020, we improved with a 0.12 incident there as far as fatalities go. We also collect data related to personal injuries. When I say personal injuries, there are major injuries and minor injuries, and so this calculates the minor injuries. We're required to report to the National Transportation Database, FTA, anytime somebody is transported for medical reasons related to an injury, and also looking at the three-year baseline, and then the last 3 years, you can see improvement from 3.47 per 100,000 miles to 3.14. Safety events are a combination of both major and minor. You can see there per 100,000 miles improvement there also from a baseline of 4.65 that was established to 3.62. System reliability. We have a program in place that allows us to basically evaluate our maintenance program of our vehicles. Again, you can see improvement as far as performance, and this would be breakdowns per 100,000 or situations where we need to respond for mechanical reasons to our vehicles. 2017 through 2019, 10,259 miles. With incident of mechanical, you see improvement there. This is the one number that we like to see larger. So our vehicles have improved in traveling 11,530 miles in comparison to the previous 3 years. So that is a good stat for us, and we'll keep looking towards improvement there. Safety performance measures other. I put this in here because there can be lagging indicators when you're collecting data where you're reacting to events that happen in your system. Train operators operate daily, and in some cases, they are in situations where they place their trains into emergency brake applications. Monitoring this data is positive for us because it allows us to look and see what's happening in our system and possibly get ahead of a potential problem by evaluating that environment and seeing if there's anything that we can do to improve that environment as far as operator safety. I work with both the bus and rail division on certain things, and we're very proud of our emergency response training program, where we bring local law enforcement and police personnel in to just help improve us in the way that we respond to emergencies within our system and improve that interaction between agencies. We'll talk a lot about the Mid-Coast Corridor Transit Project. I mentioned that I serve concurrently as the safety and security manager on that extension project. I'm very proud of the approach that we use here in San Diego because the MTS agency is very, very involved. You can see anything red on that chart, and I threw it there, identifies leaders within our organization that work on that project, and they've been working on that through design and continue through construction, and I know we're going to have a successful opening in November 2021. Activities related to Mid-Coast Corridor, I chair three committees. Those are the top three related to safety and security. Involved in a safety certification task force, and we'll be managing that on behalf of MTS, and also provide monthly updates to the project management oversight consultant for the FTA, and also provide quarterly updates to the FTA. So the FTA definitely has their eye on this project, and it's basically been stated that they view it as a gold star project, not only within the state, but nationally. We conduct internal safety and security audits annually, and the CPUC will come in and review the entire program and conduct a triennial audit every 3 years. So I just have there some of the things that we looked at this year. I'll be submitting the audit report to the CPUC no later than February 15th, and we'll have Sharon's signature that will accompany that. And proud to state that we found no findings of non-compliance with the program. So that's good news there. CPUC activities on the property, just wanted to talk to the board a little bit about the state safety oversight. So they're involved in annual review and certification of the rail agency safety plan, system security plans, and also our audits, as I previously mentioned. They also come in and review every accident that occurs on our system involving an LRB vehicle with a pedestrian, motor vehicle, or any other object. They formally accept our accidents and close our accidents, and we're in very good shape there this calendar year. They also conduct scheduled and unscheduled CPUC inspections for both operations and maintenance, and minimal findings, and we have no open corrective action plans with the state at this time. I'm going to transition to our safety manager for bus with this slide. COVID-19 has come up. I think it's on everybody's mind, and it impacts everybody within our agency and our country. And FTA acknowledged, and this was via a recommendation from the California Public Utilities Commission, they recognized our efforts related to COVID-19, and that was in a national presentation, listening session on August 20th, 2020. And very proud of our accomplishments related to COVID-19. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Jared Garcia.
Thank you, David. So my name is Jared Garcia, and like David, I have essentially the same type of oversight on the bus side of our transit system. I've been with MTS for 15 years now with a mix of both safety and operations experience. And like David, I've completed both the required and the recommended training that the FTA has established under MAP 21 regulations. Like our rail side, we've also been nationally recognized for our work in improving our safety here at MTS with the Gold Award in both 2015 for our overall improvement with reduction in our preventable accident rate, and in 2017 for our pedestrian awareness campaign and the reduction of pedestrian-related accidents. So to establish our performance targets on the bus side, we also used our previous three calendar years' performance to establish a baseline to establish our targets. And these performance targets do not consider crimes or fault or preventability. For fatalities for calendar year 2020, we had zero reportable fatalities. For injuries, we have to establish both the total amount and rate for 100,000 revenue miles. And across all bus modes, we achieved those targets for both the totals and the rates. Safety events is a little bit different. It includes injuries, but also includes other events. The majority of those would be vehicles towed from an accident scene. And four of the five categories, we met those performance targets. So all of these different safety events are reviewed on a weekly basis. So I oversee a committee that consists of myself, a member from the training department, as well as an operations manager or supervisor. We will review each of these events for not only preventability, but also causal factors. We'll review our policies, our internal policies, and also look and see if there's any improvements we can make with our training department and how we train our employees. Of the events, the safety events for calendar year 2020, 18% were preventable, with 82% were ruled to be non-preventable. And of those events, 37% were the result of a vehicle collision, and 63% were the result of a slip, trip, or fall. Our last performance target is system reliability. This is major mechanical failures, basically divided by vehicle revenue miles, and there across all modes, we exceeded our target range. While these performance targets are kind of new to MTS, looking at accident rates and setting goals is not. Historically, we've used our preventable accident rate as our key performance indicator. And as you can see here, over the last 15 years, our in-house bus operations has reduced our preventable accident rate by almost 50%, and over the last 7 years, a little over 30%. Since we established these performance targets, this board approved the targets back in July 2020. Once they were approved, we shared those with SANDAG to help coordinate the SANDAG regional plan. And since then, the SANDAG board approved these at last December's meeting. And since that meeting, we have finalized the MOU between MTS, NCTD, and SANDAG, and we will continue to coordinate with those other organizations going forward. And with that, that concludes our presentation. If anyone has any comments or questions.
Thank you. I'll go to the board, ask if there's any comments or questions from board members. All right, seeing and hearing none. Thank you for the presentation and all the good work. Let's move to our final open session agenda item today. Item 48, the operational budget status report for November 2020. We'll turn it over to Gordon for a presentation.
Good morning, my name is Gordon Meyer. I'm the Operating Budget Supervisor here at MTS. And this morning I'm going to provide an update on the FY21 operating budget through November 2020, or the first 5 months of our fiscal year. So first off, I wanted to remind everyone that the FY21 budget did include projected revenue losses and increased expenses resulting from the pandemic. Based on our initial FY21 budget draft that was passed, we were projecting a $101.6 million structural deficit. So last year in FY20, the federal government passed the $25 billion federal stimulus package, the CARES Act, Our share of that, as Mike touched on in his presentation, is $220 million to be used over multiple fiscal years, basically until it runs out. And because we were projecting a $101.6 million structural deficit in the FY21 initial budget draft, that was our projected CARES Act amount as well that was included in the budget to bridge that gap. So as you'll see on the upcoming slides, we are seeing favorable budget results through FY21 so far, and we expect that to continue through the end of the fiscal year. That means we'll need less CARES Act funding to bridge the deficit this year, and we'll have more available for out years where the structural deficits are expected to remain significant. So looking at the actual numbers, so first we'll look at our operating revenues, and this is cumulative through November. So our fiscal year is from July to November, so it's the first 5 months of our fiscal year. So fare revenue or passenger revenue, here we're favorable by just under $1.7 million or 9.4% to our budget through November. Fare revenue was unfavorable to the prior year by 21.1 million or down 52.2%. Our ridership during that same period was unfavorable to the prior year by 21.7 million passengers or down 57.4%. So the next line we have our other operating revenue. So here we're favorable by 911,000 or 14.2% so far. And that's being driven by favorable energy credit revenue as well as favorable rental income, particularly the favorable county rental income for the Mills Building Administration due to a formula change and how that's calculated. So all in all, our operating revenues are favorable by about 2.6 million or 10.7% through November. Moving on to expenses, so personnel costs are favorable by about 5.5 million or 7.9%. That's primarily due to favorable bus and trolley operator wages because we're not operating as much service as we had originally planned in the initial FY21 budget draft. And then we're also, we have favorable San Diego Transit pension contribution costs because we had put a guess in there when we were doing budget development as to how much additional contributions we would have to contribute as a result from declined investment returns. And we actually had an actuary do that study, and it was about half of what we had put in there. So instead of $15 million that was included in the budget, I think it's under $8 million. So that's a big-time favorable variance that is going to continue through the end of the year. So next is our purchase transportation. So that is our FIRST Transit as well as our TransDev contracts. And here we're favorable by 4.8 million or 13.6%, and that's primarily driven by the lower passenger volumes within our paratransit division. So that service is demand-based, and the service levels are still way down from their normal levels, so we're seeing that results in lower revenue, but in that case it also results in lower expenses. Next, our other outside services were favorable by $323,000 or 2.7%. That's primarily favorable security costs within administration. Then we have our energy, where we were favorable $374,000 or 2.6%, and that's being driven by favorable CNG, propane, diesel, and gasoline consumption with the lower service levels, partially offset by unfavorable electricity costs. And then lastly, we have our other expenses, which have been favorable by $447,000 or 4.3%. And that's being driven by favorable credit card fees, fare system materials, as well as travel expenses. And all three of those things are highly linked to the pandemic. So all in all, our operating expenses were favorable by $11.4 million or 8.1% through November. So when we roll that up, our operating revenues were favorable by $2.6 million. Our operating expenses were favorable by $11.4 million, resulting in a total favorable variance of a little over $14 million through November. And just a reminder, we have, since the pandemic, we have been reforecasting the operating budget on a monthly basis as new data becomes available. And so based on our most recent forecast, we are projecting this. This PowerPoint was actually made a couple of weeks ago. It says $80 million here. We're actually only projecting to use about $68 million in CARES Act funding for this fiscal year. But we'll be fine-tuning all of this stuff as we continue working on the FY21 amended budget, and we'll bring that to a BDC meeting here shortly. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any board member comments or questions? All right. Hearing none, agenda item 60, chair report, just real brief, encourage you, invite you all to our MTS State of the County address. Will be virtual online this evening, so feel free to join in or share. Give an update on a lot of what's ahead of us, some exciting things we're doing around zero emission buses, homeless programs, completing our criminal justice, public safety reform efforts, and so much more. So we encourage you to join that. I would like to turn it over to agenda item 61 for our chief executive officers, if any report from Karen.
Yes, I want to say formally welcome to the board of directors for 2021. We're very excited to be working with you again, and we're looking forward to at some point this year seeing you in person again. In the meantime, we'll keep the lights on here and make sure that you are given all the information you need. One of the things I did want to mention to you is that as these super centers are opening up, we're engaging very closely with city and county health officials to talk to them about ways we can improve traffic into the centers and getting people into these centers. One of the things that we are exploring and we potentially might be able to put in place this week is to offer free rides for those who have a scheduled appointment to those centers. So we will be seeing how we could roll that out. I don't foresee that there will be that many that will take advantage of it, but at least we can perhaps lighten the load a little bit. With that, I also want to thank those who did make it to the new board member orientation. That was really a great chance for you all to ask your questions, get to know us, and just kind of put your feet in the water and find out how things are going here at MTS. And so I really appreciate you all taking the time to do that. And we do have returning members in Mayor Todd Gloria was a longtime member on our board, as well as Councilmember George Gastel, who is here with us today. So welcome. And with that, I will turn it back over to you, Chair Fletcher.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any board member communications. I believe there is one additional request for public comment.
Okay, but I like Albert's angle. That one slammed.
Agenda item 63. We'll ask the clerk to call the public speaker for agenda item 63.
David Roger, we will unmute you now. David, if you could unmute yourself. We can hear you. David, you're live. David, can you unmute yourself? Chair, we're having audio issues.
Okay, we will continue ahead with our items. Our next meeting date will be February 11, 2021. With that, we will adjourn into closed session. I'll ask all board members to log off and re-log into the closed session. And thank you all for your participation today.
Reporting out of closed session, item number 24A, closed session conference with labor negotiators. The board approved a tentative agreement with IBEW 465 representing San Diego Transit Corporation Mechanics and Servicers by a vote of 13 members in favor with 2 members, Councilman Goble and Mayor Salas absent.
With that, the meeting is now adjourned.